You're listening to the I Love You Keep Going podcast with George Haas. For more information, please visit our website at www.metagroup.org. That's www.metagroup.org.
So welcome, everybody. This is I Love You Keep Going. It's September 7th, 2023. It's 7:35 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And I've been asked quite a bit this week to talk about how to date like you're secure, even if you're not. And so I thought maybe I would touch into that and see what we can do with that. One of the things that I notice in the way that insecure and disorganized people are put together is that there's a lot of anxiety around attachment, a lot of anxiety around abandonment. And a lot of the strategies that people use in relationships are around regulating the abandonment anxiety and not about developing productive relationships. So that's one of the things that we should really start with. When you meet somebody and you like them and you get a little bit involved with them, it seems to jack up the intensity of the abandonment terror. And so a lot of the decisions then get made not from this fully functioning, fully mentalizing place, but from this place of low mentalizing and a need to regulate the abandonment experience. And so often that takes the form of rushing into overcommitting in relationships in the first few months before you really have a sense of who the person is that you're committing to and whether or not they can keep the commitments that they're making to you, much less whether you can keep the commitments that you're making to them. So I like to talk about this in terms of going really slowly. And what I mean by really slowly is spend 6 months or so getting to know somebody so that you know, or at least you have a chance of having a sense of knowing who they are. Of course, if that creates this acute experience of abandonment terror and you want to lock them up so that they can't get away, then you're really committing to somebody who you don't know. And committing to things that you don't know, you would want to commit to somebody that you did know once you figure that out. So a lot of it for insecure, disorganized people in the beginning is separating out the urgency that comes from the dysregulated abandonment experience from what makes sense in terms of organizing a relationship. One of the other things that happens to disorganized and insecure people is that they want to find meaning. And because their exploration systems are truncated in some fashion, where they look for meaning is not from the exploration, but from the experience of being in relationship to someone else. And this inevitably leads to a sense of deprivation because you don't find the meaningfulness of life. You don't find the fulfillment of life in the relationship experience. The relationship experience is meant to support you so that you can then go explore and discover the things that have meaning. And then they're a place to come back to and share those discoveries with someone else and to be supported and encouraged to help understand what it is that you found out and then be pushed out the door again so that you can go do more exploration. Particularly with disorganized people, but also with insecure people, often what I see in the work that we do is that people hole up together and they use each other as a way of justifying that they don't need to explore. But then the burden on the relationship to provide that sense of meaningfulness becomes greater and greater, particularly over time if the sense of isolating, cocooning together and not exploring goes on for too long. Christian.
George, do you think of like relationships in and of themselves, and like having a wide social circle as potentially being a source of meaning, or in like exploration?
I don't think of it that way, really. One of the things that happens when you have a circle of close friends is if they're actively exploring, you get a lot of information about the nature of the world and the nature of subjects that you might not really be wanting to explore so deeply, but because they are, that can be quite enriching and quite supportive of your own exploration, but it in itself won't be enough. The relationships themselves are really meant as the safety net to catch you that you can take risks in your exploration. I'm not talking about a financial safety net, although sometimes that happens, but really a support for exploring the ideas of what you want to understand, and then helping you go and do it, and then also the explanation of the experiences that you have, what you found out, that dialogue is also enriching. But if you're not out exploring and not bringing back that to the relationship in order to share it, there's no source of that inherently in the relationship experience.
I guess like maybe this is kind of a it seems like a kind of a contradiction to me, or like anything that I would explore, it seems like ultimately the goal is kind of relational. Like I want to share this with people, like for me to make something big in the world, or like if I make an artwork, like ultimately there's a relationship, there's a relational component to sharing that. So it's like it seems like these two are kind of intertwined no matter what.
Well, certainly, I would agree that if you make an artwork, one of the pieces of making an artwork is that it is shared in the community. The community, though, is beyond what the inner circle is, or maybe you just share it in the inner circle. One of the things you have to be careful about with art projects and that sort of thing is that it isn't really an auto-regulating strategy, where you're really using that activity as a way of being alone and not having to depend or actually engage in community. So I always think of art as something that's pushed out into the community in some way, not necessarily for a reaction, but that you're engaging in that process of creating and expressing rather than simply being in the process of creating in a way that really takes on more of the characteristics of auto-regulating than communicating or collaboratively communicating with other people.
Right. All right. I sorry, I didn't want to take us off the dating path, but
So, for instance, if you play the violin, do you play on your own or do you play out? That would be a question.
the goal is to play out, but there's a lot of alone time there too. So there's kind of a balance to strike, yeah.
So that's this balance between community and exploration, I think. One of the things about attachment conditioning is it tends to create patterns of relationship. So secure people tend to go with secure people because secure people have all of the qualities that another secure person might want. They function well. They're used to collaborative relationships, and they're reliable and they can show up. They understand the amount of time, energy, and resources that secure relationships take, and so they're willing to put that time, energy, and resources into having the relationships because they know the utility of having that safety net in terms of supporting their exploration and the risks that you would be willing to take. Insecure and disorganized people don't actually have the experience of that value. And so insecure and disorganized people tend to put less energy into relationships than secure people do. And in that limiting of the amount of energy that you're willing to put into relationships, in some sense can be self-limiting in terms of having secure functioning relationships. So mainly the difference between secure relationships is that they're collaborative, and insecure relations tend to be transactional. And then disorganized relationships tend to be organized around trauma bonding. So collaborative relationships is where you agree to take care of each other and you collaborate with each other in finding ways where you can both do that. And you negotiate these agreements in the relationship where each party is concerned that both parties win. So it's a win-win environment where neither party is willing to accept a win-lose situation. Once you get into transactional relationships, that's not true at all. One person can win and one person can lose. And if you're a bad deal maker, then you're likely to lose. And then that's just part of the process of making relationships function. Dismissing people tend to be people who get taken care of. And so what they're looking for are people to be in relationship to where they don't have to reciprocate care. They can transact the care that they want through an exchange of material things. Preoccupied people are looking for proximity more than they are for intimacy. And so if they can make a deal with somebody where they can have physical proximity, then they accept the disadvantage of not being taken care of. Skillful relationships in that kind of frame, the dismissing side provides enough care so that their caregiver doesn't burn out providing the care. And in unskillful relationships, the dismissing person allows the preoccupied person to burn out, then the relationships come apart. The dismissing person actually doesn't care so much who it is that's providing the care as long as the care is there. And as long as they have resources in order to transact it, they can move from one person to another, although there's a lot of training that goes into being well taken care of. So the more skillful version of a dismissing person provides enough care for their preoccupied person so that the care is ongoing over a course of a lifetime. So that can actually stabilize and be a productive relationship, but it's transactional, not intimate in that sense. And then, you know, further down the road, further down the level of inability to do that, you'll see dismissing people that are switching out of relationships pretty quickly, and preoccupied people are burning out and withdrawing from relationships. So the most common formulation of relationship is secure with secure, and then the second most common is dismissing with preoccupied. That making sense? A dismissing person can also go with another dismissing person. That tends to be what we call the power couple in our society. They both gain advantage from being with the other, but they both have their own means of resource, both dismissing. Preoccupied people don't tend to go with other preoccupied people because there's nobody exploring. Dismissing people explore, mainly secondary exploration in the gathering of resources, and keep their primary exploration private, but that's enough to enliven the relationship. Two preoccupied people where neither person is exploring the relationships lose vitality pretty quickly when that happens. Even though each of the preoccupied persons want proximity above all things, if there's no energy coming in, no experience of exploration coming in, the relationships get quite stale, since the preoccupied person is looking for the other person to provide the energy of exploration. Is that making sense? Disorganized people can go with dismissing people, because dismissing people don't care whether you're reliable. They just care that you show up with the psychic juice that they need. So you show up with the energy, the dismissing person gets taken care of, gets valued, gets idealized, and that's good for them. And then the what's good for the disorganized person is that they can come and go without the penalty of being unreliable. One of the things that happens for disorganized people with secure people is that secure people don't accept the level of unreliability that the disorganized people have. So a couple of chances will be given, but then when you don't show up, then that's pretty much it. Preoccupied people, because they seek proximity and closeness to emotionally regulate, don't want to engage in disorganized people, because disorganized people withdraw and isolate to emotionally regulate. So there's a contradiction between the drive for preoccupied people to seek proximity and the need for a dysregulated, disorganized person to withdraw into isolation to regulate. So what you'll notice is that disorganized people mainly have relationships with other disorganized people. And because both parties are so unreliable, there's this constant coming apart of the relationship and then reconciling and coming together. So the on-off rhythm of relationships is really a characteristic of disorganized people. Is that making sense? When you talk, not all relationships, of course, are sexually intimate relationships, but if intimate friendships are a wonderful thing. And we talk about that as the B group of people that you're close to, that you tell everything to, that you engage with routinely and regularly, physically seeing them and being able to, touch them, that kind of thing is important. But when you do bring sexuality into the mix, then you're again looking at the different patterns of the way that people relate. Secure people, of course, are open to closeness. They're open to intimacy. And so the sexual exploration that happens there tends to be much more explorative in terms of the intimate needs of both of the parties in there. When you move into the transactional piece of the relationships, it's more performance oriented. You do this for that, they do that for this, back and forth. Each of us grow up in the environments that we grow up in. We are given the education around sexual expression. Sexual expression begins really at the very beginning. It's not that the genital areas aren't sensitive to stimulus from the very beginning. Of course, they are. And then how you are able to explore your body and how your caregivers respond to the way that you explore the body. Children are admonished not to make sexual expressions in polite company, as we would say. Growing up the way I did. And so depending on how those admonishments happened, I remember, the child was maybe 4 years old, and he refused to wear clothes, which happens often at that age. And the caregivers let that go. And then we were sitting outside, and he started to fondle himself, and his mother said, that's something that you should really do in private. So if you want to do that, just go inside and do it in private. And his response was, it's my donker and I'll do what I want with it. Which I thought was really skillful. She said, oh, what do you do with a kid? But that's, you know, those are the kinds of exchanges. Do you remember the admonishments or the instructions that you got when you were a kid and you were naturally engaged in exploring? Were the boundaries between adults and children well protected so that you didn't have influence of sexual desire from adults that would have been impossible for you to navigate as a child? All of the different things that happen. I facetiously say, you probably heard me say it, we're all born with a slick, smooth sports car of a sexual orientation. By the time we're old enough to drive, it's a beat up old jalopy. So all of those things impact that. So secure people have that leg up again because they were held, they were caressed, they were delighted in. And so when they meet a partner, that they can then accept all of that, and they're also good at expressing that. Dismissing people, on the other hand, were not held. They were neglected, profoundly neglected. And so they have trouble with physical contact. They have trouble with the way that the body smells. They have trouble with the vulnerability that's necessary to get aroused. This could be male or female, of course. There's an equal number of each. And so they tend to not like intimate expressions. They're used to transactional relationships. And so they like to transact how it's going to go. They like control. They like a minimum of skin contact, all sorts of things. They like it to be clean, because of the difficulty of scent. All of that stuff impacts the way that sexual relationships can unfold. Preoccupied people, of course, will pretend to be whatever you want. So their goal in sexual expression is not sexual satisfaction, but proximity seeking. So they often trade sexual encounters when the goal for them is not sexual satisfaction, but proximity. And they also learn that if they provide satisfying sexual encounters, that the encounters end. And so they often bring problems into the sexual relationship, which aren't real problems, unsolvable problems in the sexual dynamic, so that the need for proximity is extended. Once you get past the trauma line into trauma bonding, disorganized people often have had some kind of physical or sexual abuse in their childhood experiences. And so their associations with arousal, their associations with desire, their associations with the physical act of sex are often clouded by painful or frightening experiences of childhood, which tends to interfere with the ease of a sexual experience. One of the things that happens quite commonly is that sexual arousal is understood as a harming feeling when you get involved with people who you really care about, and then you're aroused by them. It's very confusing to navigate this, the value that you have for the person and the wish to harm them, which is how you understand sexual arousal. So all of that stuff needs to be looked at and understood so that you can make sense of how you operate in relationships. If there isn't a good way to resolve that, of course, then the limitations that are imposed by that early childhood conditioning interfere with the way that the relationships form. And then they fail, and then you gather up this disappointment of relationships not working. And then by the time you're in your mid to late 30s, the accumulation of the disappointment is so great that you no longer are willing to risk trying anymore, because you don't want to be disappointed again, because you're overwhelmed by the hopelessness of trying to make relationships work. If you're disorganized, you can see around you, people make relationships work, and yet you completely beyond your capacity to make that happen. And that, and the failure of the relationships, or the on-off again, the unreliability of the relationship experiences is so disruptive to your life that you can't really get anything to happen. And so you abandon the disruption in your life so that at least you can get some things to happen. So then we have in disorganized people in particular, after the late 30s, not really having any intimate involvements. Maybe you have C's or sometimes close C's, but you don't really allow anything beyond that because it's too disappointing. So that's the landscape of how attachment unfolds in relationships. And so one of the reasons that we talk about moving into relationships in the way that we do is that we want to be able to overcome some of the failings that the conditioning, the early childhood attachment experiences have caused. The first thing we suggest is that you change your mind about relationships and understand that it is possible to form supportive, meaningful relationships that actually will help you in your life, help your exploration. This doesn't mean you have to jump into sexual relationships. We are also talking about the inner circle of friends. Monogamy versus polygamy is one of those characteristics of sexual orientation, which is pretty fixed in most people. Monogamous people can't really adapt to polyamory. They just aren't wired that way. But polyamorous people can commit to a monogamous relationship if they find somebody who's more on the monogamous end of things. If you're on the poly end of it, there's, you know, there is a way to understand and organize relationships so that they're actually supportive and productive of your exploration and not something that interferes with that. And then you also have to tell the difference between somebody who's genuinely polyamorous and somebody who's merely commitment phobic. Which is something that also happens. So we talk about this changing your mind and undertaking the project of building out your intimate inner circle. The Dunbar research suggests that between 2 and 5 people is what an inner circle looks like broadly. Some people like to have an A relationship and some people don't. Either one is fine. When we talk about an A relationship, we're talking about a committed relationship where you see and take care of them on a daily or every other day basis. A B relationship is where you see somebody and take care of them on a weekly or every other week basis. So not as much commitment or resource not as resource intensive, and they're above the line. That is to say, you tell them everything. And what do we mean by that? We mean that you're able to express to them your complete experience of the present moment without being so afraid that if you did that, you would be abandoned, so that you were unable to do it. Is that making sense? So something happens and you're able to express it in a clear way and communicate your experience so that they understand it. And they're able to do that for you. They're able to express to you their experience of the present moment and with the expectation that you'll be interested in hearing it, and no matter what it is, you won't abandon them. Is that making sense? The other main difference between an A relationship and a B relationship is that in an A relationship, you set the requirements of your personal exploration into second position and the needs of the relationship into first position. Lucy. Lucy wants to play. She's not. Lucy's my dog, in case you don't know. But she's interrupting. We will nonetheless persevere, and then I'll play with her later. So an example of you putting the needs of the relationship ahead of your personal exploration would be you've worked your entire life for the dream job. You get the offer of the dream job. Yes, Lucy is a doll, not even a bee, because she doesn't really reciprocate. That was a note in the chat I was answering. You get your an offer for a dream job in New York, and you're living with somebody in Los Angeles, and you say, that's wonderful. I've always wanted this opportunity. Let me talk to my partner, and then I'll get back to you. That would be putting your personal exploration behind the needs of the relationship. Then you'd have to figure out how your partner might work out the fact that you'd have to relocate in order to have that job. Whereas if they were a B, you could say, that's awesome. I can't wait to start. And then off you go to the new job that you have, knowing that your Bs are going to be impacted by your departure, but not using, not allowing that to interfere with what you explore. Christian.
So I guess this sort of comes back to the question I was asking earlier. If you put the relationship ahead of your own exploration, does that, like, would you frame that as actually encompassing the relationship within your exploration? So that kind of becomes like, that sort of becomes a form of exploration as well?
I would put it as you're still obligated to support each other's exploration, but you negotiate time, energy, and resources toward what can go to the explorations and what goes toward supporting the couple. Stan Takin uses the phrase couple bubble. But you're not off the hook for supporting each other's exploration in that formulation. In fact, it's in some ways more supportive, because you have this intimate who's involved in how that all unfolds, which is not necessarily true of B level relationships. You would want somebody who wants you to succeed in what's meaningful to you. Now, of course, they get somebody who's succeeding in the things that are meaningful to them. So they get to be with this person who's succeeding and vital and engaged. And then if they're supported in the same way, then their partner gets the same benefit, that their partner is engaged. You know, it's hard to get anything to happen in life. And you have to persist to have it happen most of the time. And it's easy to give up. And so if you have that, the support, they keep you going. That's really valuable. And also, you do that for them.
I have a question on that.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't know if Christian was done. Are you done?
He seems to be.
Okay. Talking about dating.
You froze there for a second, so you'll have to start again at the beginning.
Oh, my is unstable. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I can turn off the video and that might help. Okay. So if you're coming from a history, a long history of insecure attachments, insecure the whatever the basis of your relationships is coming from there, and you know that you're preoccupied and you have some disorganized. How do you approach a person with, how do you get yourself out there? Like, I'm about the same age as you, 70. And it's, when I look at that field, it's like, how would I put myself out there without being transactional, in the sense of I'm looking for somebody who will support me in my exploration and I will support you. Can you do that? It's, how would you even get started in that?
By exploring. What is it? You begin your exploration. You go to places where you're interested in finding stuff out, and you encounter people that are also there interested in finding stuff out. And then if you like somebody, you engage them. But here's the thing, you go slowly. The main thing that you want to know from somebody else, and this is what we talk about, is do they regulate you reliably? That's really the thing to find out. So we can get caught up in this whole framework of this this time in the future when we've figured out how to be in relationship, but we really want to pull it in quite close to what's happening now and just look at whether or not they regulate us reliably. And really, that's all you need to know for the first few months of seeing them periodically, or how often that happens.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of projected fears of repeating old history and of the age group roles, and that comes with a lot of baggage because they are probably in secure relationships. So it's like, it almost seems insurmountable to even get to that point of slow dating when you could be dead in 5 years.
You could be dead in 15 minutes.
Well, that's true. But I mean, the likelihood of having this long lasting exploratory, you know, relationship is limited when you're entering your 70s. And I don't know what the guidebook is for insecure people moving to secure at that age, but it feels like I've been working at it a long time now.
True. I earned my security at 65. I can tell you that being 70 now and having 5 years of it, it's totally worth it. There's no question in my mind that it's totally worth it at any time in your life, because it's so much easier to be alive.
Right.
But you don't have to figure out the whole relationship. You just have to figure out, do I feel better, do I feel the same, or do I feel worse? And for the first 2 or 3 months, really, you're just looking for the, I feel better. That's what you're looking for. And that you can do.
I feel better when I have proximity.
Do you feel emotionally regulated, or just feel proximate?
There's just a strong need for proximity in the beginning of any relationship. Like, where are you? I need you with me. And
that's the abandonment terror that I was talking about at the beginning of the
Right.
But what you're attempting to do there is regulate the abandonment experience, which is the thing that pushes people to move too fast. So then what we want to do is recognize, oh, this is the abandonment terror, and I need to regulate it in some way. Does it matter?
Self-regulate.
Proximity. So. Well, spread it around more than one person. Proximity is often indifferent to who it is, as long as you're there. But paying attention to that, do I feel better? Do I feel the same? Do I feel worse? So that requires you to tune into your own emotional landscape, your own emotional feeling, separate from the empathetic experience where you get over-involved.
And you feel terror of, if I get involved, I will be abandoned.
Right, that's the fearfulness. If I lose proximity, I'll be abandoned.
That's the point where I'm at. Yeah, it's like, how do I even get introduced to somebody who, when there's terror going into it?
So then part of it is the cognitive piece of recognizing that that actually isn't an engagement in the relationship. It's an abandonment terror that comes from conditioning. Developing your emotional regulation skills, both with other people and in your own capacity, to regulate that experience, and then pay attention to whether the experience of being with the other person is regulating or
not. Okay, so it sounds like it helps to have multiple people.
Yes, that's I recommend that you have a bunch of people. One of the other things about forming relationships is that most relationships don't go the distance. And so if you do them serially rather than as a group, it takes too long, right? It's one of the things that contributes to the disappointment. But if you date multiple people and you're able to monitor the actual intimacy that you're developing in the relationship, then the ones that go the distance will go the distance, but the ones that don't will just fall away. But you'll have done them simultaneously rather than individually. And the time frame will get compressed a huge amount by doing that.
I think dating time would feel like polygamy. Because I'm putting my heart into each one to some degree.
Well, as appropriate to where the relationship is, how it's developing, it takes time to get to know people. I mean, at least 6 months to get to know somebody before you want to commit. But even at 6 months, you don't know them that well. And then also, what are you looking for and what are they looking for? People who rush into relationships rush in without actually declaring what it is they think they're committing to, or what the other person, or having the other person declare what they're committing to. So we're going to the next level, and both of your levels could be completely different than each other. And then you're constantly disappointed that they're not living up to your level, but they don't know what your level is, and their level is something completely different. So you have to really bring this out and negotiate what it actually means to be more committed in a relationship.
Right. So do I use the language of insecure relationships to say, I mean, that's kind of heady in a date. By the way, I have an insecure relationship and I want you to have secure for me.
Right. I'm just going to have you sit down with my friend and they're going to interview you for 2 hours.
Yes. George Haas is for 2 hours.
And you're not enough to me. Fuck off.
Right. I would love that. Cut to the chase.
So that's why simplifying this is really all that matters in the beginning. If you, and from an economic point of view, in terms of relational energy, is, are they going to be able to reliably regulate you when you need it? And people who are insecure tends to leap over that whole part of the beginning foundational setting up relationships to the proximity piece.
Yep.
And then if they do need somebody to be able to regulate them and they pick somebody who can't do it, the person can't do it and you can't get regulated in the relationship. It is the thing that I notice the most in the couples work that I do, that the couple, they're not regulating for each other, and there's not much that you can do about that. One of the pieces that people do is they allow an expansion of the B group. So there's a larger friend group, and the friend groups are who you go to for regulating. But if you're committing at an A level, all of that time, energy, and resources, it doesn't make sense to have picked somebody who can't regulate.
Right. I know. It just seems like it's a big task and there's no way of knowing if it's going to work in the beginning.
Don't have to take it all in one bite. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is notice whether somebody's regulating for you. That's it.
Right, without making it transactional. Like, I need you now to help me self-regulate or regulate.
No, you're just paying attention to whether you feel regulated. Do you feel better? Do you feel the same? And do you feel worse? That's all.
And what if it's different every time? It's inconsistent.
And it's not reliable, and you're looking for somebody who reliably regulates you.
But what if it's me that's inconsistent?
Then you work on your consistency.
Okay. I'm just going around in loops here.
Yeah, right.
All right. Thank you. We'll see what happens if I do go out. I was thinking of doing online dating. I don't know what else to do around here. So that's a big risk.
Yes, just go slow. That's all. Slow.
As if I have all the time in the world.
You have all the time that you have, and going fast actually won't help.
Okay. I got the basics there. Thank you.
Joanna?
Oh, you partly answered it because the question was around regulating. Does it mean that we are experiencing being regulated by the other person's behavior or presence? Or does it mean also that we can feed in information about what makes us more, whatever, attuned or feeling safe, or and the person is actually actively responding? So that would be the mark that the person regulates us or cares for us. Those so just are, a clarification.
Those are two different things.
Yeah.
The autonomic, unconscious, automatic process of being regulated by someone isn't about them doing something in particular. It's about the way that their energy interacts with your energy.
Right. But if let's say the presumed partner, the person in relationship, does not step in to the collaborative part of actually feeding that kind of information that, you know, just informs the entire system of the relationship, then that is, how would you read that kind of situation?
Well, they'd still prospect or not regulating.
You're not regulated.
That or not.
Yeah.
So what, you know, you can find somebody who's really regulating for you and you could not be regulating for them, or you could be dysregulating for them. You could find somebody that you really don't like and doesn't treat you very well, but is still very regulating. That's one of the things that invites people into relationships that don't work that well, is that the regulating experience is there and it's really good, but that they don't treat you well enough. They're separate. And that's why you really want to pay attention to this baseline. Do I feel better? Do I feel the same? Do I feel worse? Then you can get into all of that stuff that you're talking about, but that's later in the negotiation of the relationship. First, you want to know, do I feel better? Do I feel the same, or do I feel worse? And then you need to know from them, do they feel better? Do they feel worse? And the only relationships that really can go forward are the ones where you both regulate each other. Then you can get into what you're talking about, which is and the way I like to frame it is, do you like to take care of them in the way that they need to be taken care of? Because if you don't enjoy it enough, you won't do it enough, and they'll complain, and it'll be a source of friction in the relationship. Then you can find out from them, do they like taking care of you in the way that you need to be taken care of? Because if they don't like it, they don't enjoy it, they won't do enough of it, and you won't feel taken care of, and it'll be a source of friction. And that's where that negotiation takes place. Then you should spend time on it. You have to tell them how to take care of you. They have to learn how to do it. And then you have to see whether they just do it when you need it without you having to ask, because that's what a collaborative relationship is. They undertake your care. They learn how to do it. And then when they see that you need the care, they provide it, and then you do that for them. Then, if all four of those things are in place, you can get on to the next piece, which is, does it make sense the way that your explorations are for you to travel together? Because if your interests are so far apart that finding out about your exploration doesn't really do anything for them, and finding about their exploration doesn't really do anything for you. That synergy between explorations doesn't happen. And the relationships are less lively.
But I guess from the three elements that you mentioned, like the exploration, the collaborative co-regulation, and like energetic mutual regulation, you could enter from any one of those dimensions into relationship. You could be co-explorers in a, right, in a, any particular theme, and deepen your attraction or intimacy, or discover, start discovering something about the relationship, and start building those, exploring at least those blocks, right?
Right. Yeah, any direction you can come in. But what I'm suggesting you do is monitor the energy flows into relationships and flow more energy into relationships that have all of those advantages and less energy into the ones that don't. When you're in resentment or anger in a relationship, it's because you're flowing too much energy into the relationship for what you're getting back. So it isn't that you need to break off the relationship, it's just you need to adjust the flow of energy in the relationship so it's commiserate with what's actually happening. And like I said, in my couples work, the number one problem that's not really overcomable is that either one person is regulated and the other one isn't, or both of them are not regulated by the relationship. Everything else could look good, but because those two elements are in there, every time somebody gets in trouble out in the world, they don't have a base to come back to that can help them come back into balance. And then if the relationship is expansive enough that they can have other regulators around so that they can get regulated, then the relationships can go on for, you know, even a long while. But if one person becomes upset that the other person is regulating with other people and not with them, then those relationships have a hard time surviving. Shall we do a little practice? Loving kindness or insight? Maybe some loving kindness. All right, let go of the meditation. How'd that go? We just finished up a level one. We're going to start a level two in, I think, some point soon. And then what else? A bunch of different stuff on the website. Take a look. Saturday, we're doing the how to give the adult attachment interview, which is really about the 2-hour initial interview. That's something that interests you in terms of understanding attachment. How we assess attachment, that's a good thing. It won't give you an insight into your attachment. You have to take the interview and have it scored for that. But I think it'll be fun. And then also to listen to Dean Dozier talk about what it is that is required in the interview so that you're delivering something that's scorable in a way that's reliable. I offer this teaching freely, but I do hope you'll consider making a donation. There's a link on the website to do it. Any donation of any amount helps support me in the work Metagroup is doing. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your practice, and we'll see you soon. Bye.